Fidel Castro's death and what we can learn in our discussions of the spinning of the story of Cuba and Venezuela required by this event, required by this event and Hugo Chavez's earlier death, the global statesman's insistence on total control of what information we the people get, the illusion of academic freedom, the fraudulent presidential election, the systematic elimination of dissent using the hidden weapon of EMF, with Prince and Nicola representing our challenge to this, all suggest that it's time we laid to rest any lingering attachment some of us may have to the concept of democracy, particularly as it is practically expressed under conditions of a global class system as being what we want for our future. And we've argued that it's best simply to use the word freedom and define that as freedom from necessity. That describes what it is we want for our future. That and the fact that that freedom from necessity is based in individual self-sufficiency, material and soul self-sufficiency. The global power guys' spin on Cuba, Venezuela, and the U.S. presidential election are all of a piece, all spun of the same desperation to return us to somnambulance now that we're breaking out of their trance. And this is another article from the New York Times I'm quoting about this. Former police officer in Fidel Castro's newly established government, Juan Montes, said he had seen a police force once viewed as a collection of corrupt thugs become professional. From 1959 to 1962, Mr. Montes said, Cubans all over the country were eager to serve Mr. Castro. But there were enemies close by, mostly wealthier Cuban exiles who had fled when Mr. Castro began nationalizing property. They had the support of the United States, and when their attack came at the Bay of Pigs on April 17, 1961, Mr. Montes was guarding the home of Celia Sanchez, a famous guerrilla fighter and Mr. Castro's longtime lover and confidant. The Cuban Missile Crisis and the American trade embargo only strengthened the siege mentality that Mr. Castro relied on for decades, as he argued repeatedly that Cuba must remain under tight control lest the northern imperialists invade and turn the island into an American fief. And unquote. That's from One Family, Six Decades, Myriad Views of Castro by Damian Kay, from the New York Times of November 28, 2016. And now as I type the question that follows, as I typed that question, I sat as a test of endurance, my head swollen with mucus from a continuous blast from the state's arsenal of EMF weapons. My entire body now feels like a struck tuning fork, vibrating silently but loud in my head, the swelling and continuous electrical charge making my muscles feel stiff, stiff as the interstellar insect in Men in Black in its Edgar suit. And as an aside, I love the small but significant lessons about power in that film. One day maybe we should, wouldn't it be fun to have a little movie night and then afterwards discuss the power metaphors, or lessons, I should say, about power. How the Will Smith character learns its nature, the nature of power, of the power guys, by observing its reactions to him. So, big bad bug got a bit of a soft spot, huh? He says as he crunches a very large bug underfoot. And I was so disappointed, I have to add, when the Linda Fiorentino character wasn't part of the sequel. She has to have one of the most awesome voices and presence Hollywood has given us, a Prince quality. You don't want to look at anyone else when she's on the screen. Right up there with Jack Nicholson, and I'm certain Paul Robeson had this quality to the maximum degree, judging by the photographs. I digress. So, Fidel, made the argument that the global power guys will fight unceasingly to prevent the example of someone seeming to triumph over them continue to exist, let alone the example of an entire population that went up against these power guys and survived, unrecumbent. Do you think he's got a case?